Welcome to the second hour's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Ellen Knoll Museum asking for mask help. As frontline workers continue to help us fight COVID-19, the Ellen Knoll Art Museum wants to do its part to help them. They are making headbands that hold masks with buttons to prevent sore ears. The museum would greatly appreciate the donation of old cotton knit shirts, stretchy fabric, or buttons to create headbands for Odessa Regional Medical Center with a goal of 250. If you know how to sew and have fabric or buttons at home, they would also appreciate your help in creating headbands, a news release said. A donation box at the west door entrance where donations may be dropped off is available. For questions or help on how to make a donation, email marketing@knollartmuseum.org. Woman charged with assaulting husband with kitchen knife. A 31-year-old woman was arrested after she reportedly assaulted her husband, which included attempting to stab him with a kitchen knife and slash his tires. Assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony. The reported assault happened around 11:45 p.m. Friday in the 3600 block of North Dixie, an Odessa Police Department affidavit detailed. Dispatch was reportedly told that a woman, later identified as Franklin, was attempting to slash the tires of a vehicle with a knife. Franklin stated she and her husband, identified as Melvin Tolliver, had been arguing. Officers saw that Franklin had bloodshot, glassy eyes, slurred speech, and a strong odor of an alcoholic beverage emitting from her breath and person, the affidavit stated. She admitted that she had been drinking. Franklin reportedly told an officer that she and Tolliver were arguing over Tolliver's car. Franklin stated that when Tolliver attempted to leave, she did slash the tires of the vehicle with a knife. She stated she did not cause physical contact to Tolliver and that Tolliver did not cause physical contact to her. Tolliver stated that Franklin always gets violent when she drinks, the affidavit stated. He stated that Franklin had bit him on the chin during the assault. Officers saw that Tolliver had a small red blood spot on his chin, which was consistent with his claim. Tolliver also reportedly told an officer that Franklin began to slap him. He walked away from Franklin with his hands behind his back. Tolliver stated that Franklin grabbed a kitchen knife and attempted to stab him with it. He stated that when Franklin did so, he grabbed her wrists to keep her from stabbing him. Tolliver stated that Franklin's children witnessed the incident. Franklin's daughter stated that she saw her parents arguing in the living room. She also stated that her mother had been drinking and that her mother struck Tolliver with an aluminum broom, and she showed officers a damaged broom. She also showed officers the kitchen knife that Franklin had used to attack Tolliver, but she stated that she only saw Franklin use the knife to slash the tires of the vehicle, the affidavit detailed. Franklin was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. She had one bond totaling $30,000, and she posted bail Monday, jail records show. Animal Shelter Foster Program Sees Positive Results by Sam Waller. While the Odessa Animal Shelter has been closed to the public for the past 3 weeks, there are still ways to help support the shelter and even adopt pets. With the coronavirus pandemic limiting public gatherings, the animal shelter and its supporters have sought out novel ways to provide housing and care for animals. Among the solutions has been placing animals with host families on a foster basis. It's put everybody in a bind. But before we closed to the public, we had a lot of people step up and foster with over 80 animals out within 2 days, said Ashley Ontiveros, interim director for Odessa Animal Shelter. That was a big surprise to us. Karen Patterson of Fix West Texas, one of several volunteer groups who help the animal shelter, said the foster program was a necessity. The Odessa Animal Shelter has been closed to the public since March 23rd. In talking with the shelter, we realized with the pandemic going on and the oil market falling at the same time, they had too many animals, Patterson said. They needed to reduce the hours for the non-essential personnel and clear the kennels for some new intake. The results so far have been positive, Ontiveros said. We've actually started to call on most of the pet fosters, and more than half have been wanting to actually adopt the animals, Ontiveros said. We think we have made maybe a handful that are willing to hold them until we get back up, and then they'll either bring them back to us or find a permanent rescue. The majority who've offered to foster are wanting to adopt. That's a great deal of help for us, and of course, the pets find a home. While day-to-day business in countless industries has been shut down because of the pandemic, the animal shelter is still receiving strays, which Ontiveros said is taking up more and more space. Right now, we have about 90 or closer to 100, she said. I think we have one cat that's been brought in since we've been closed, but we still keep getting dogs in. Patterson said Fix West Texas, which offers spaying and neutering of animals, is trying to help keep numbers down. The problem out here is there's so many strays, and that's why we started Fix West Texas, she said. We felt like through birth control, we could lower the intake rate at the animal shelter, but we're only 3 months into it. But fostering animals is a solution for the shelter's immediate need to place animal. To that end, Ontiveros said, volunteers have created a Facebook page, Foster Friends of the Odessa Animal Control, with photos and videos of available animals. They have been posting our dogs that come in, so if people are looking for their dogs that may have been picked up as strays, they're able to see if they're here. And then, of course, they're posting the ones we still have. If people are interested in adopting or temporary fostering, they can go on there and call us and can adopt over the phone. Unfortunately, they won't be able to meet the animals until we bring the animal out to them. Patterson said several volunteers have adopted animals during the shelter's shutdown. We adopted two fosters, Patterson said. Lori Van Hooser and I are board members of Fix West Texas. We decided we should do what we're going to ask other people to do. She got a puppy, and I ended up getting two that had been strays. They had been at the shelter for about 6 months, and they're big pit mixes. We've got them here, and they've been wonderful. Another group we work with is called Dog Rescue R Us. They transport about 5,000 dogs a year up north from this area. They've stepped up and said any dogs we've fostered, instead of sending them back to the shelter if the dogs aren't adopted, then they are going to transport to new homes. Whether people want to adopt or just foster, Ontiveros said, the Facebook page has already made an impact. We've had a few that have said they want to adopt this one or temporary foster this one, and we've taken it out to them, she said. They've all adopted. We've had three or four of them who didn't meet the animal prior. They just saw the picture, and they've all adopted. Small businesses are among most impacted by pandemic, by Tony Venegas. The ongoing coronavirus pandemic has changed life across the country, with small businesses being among the most dramatically impacted. Add that with the recent downturn in oil prices in the Permian Basin, and that's making things even tougher for businesses to get by. There are resources being put in place to help some of these small businesses, including the Payroll Protection Provision, PPP, as part of the CARES Act recently passed by the federal government, as well as the Economic Injury Disaster Loan, EIDL, program. For Tyler Patton, a business consultant and director of the Small Business Development Center at UTPB, taking advantage of those resources is a good first step for businesses to take advantage of that situation. These small businesses are going to continue to get financial pressure throughout the course of this disaster, Patton said. Anything that's available that could be a potential stopgap for these small businesses helps, so we don't lose them and those jobs. There are some differences in how the two loans operate, but the goal of helping businesses maintain payroll is the same. The PPP starts as a loan and can become a grant contingent on keeping that payroll consistent by keeping employees on staff and not laying them off, Patton said. It's also a loan that has a 1% interest rate for 2 years and is more of a short-term solution. The EIDL loan is a 30-year term loan with a 3.75% interest rate that is expected to change, according to Patton. There are no fees associated with either loan and no penalty with the EIDL for an early payment. Because of the drop in the price of oil, Patton said that some businesses were in a tough spot to begin with. He encourages small businesses who have not applied already to do so for both. I have to think that every business that was impacted by the price of oil is being impacted by the coronavirus, he said. That should not stop from trying to apply before both of these programs. He also added that the banks providing those loans have seen a surge in those applications. A lot of banks are telling me that they've processed as many loans over the last 2 weeks as they normally do in an entire quarter or more, he said. As far as when they get funded, that's going to vary wildly from business to business and circumstance to circumstance. Another program that is set to take effect was announced by Texas Governor Greg Abbott during a Monday news conference. Abbott announced a new statewide initiative as part of a $50 million loan package designed to strengthen the economy and provide businesses with another source of capital during the shutdown. The loans will be provided by Goldman Sachs, while Lyft Fund, a nonprofit company, will distribute the money for businesses that qualify. These loans can also be partially or even entirely forgiven if certain criteria are met. They, small businesses, are leading job creation in our state, said Abbott Monday. They have been sidelined by COVID-19. Their ongoing existence has been threatened. What they need most at this time is an economic lifeline, an infusion of capital as they prepare to return to business as usual. When that return to business happens is still uncertain. The Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation at the University of Washington latest projections show that Texas is expected to hit its peak resource use April 29th, but Abbott also extended the statewide declaration of disaster order until May 13th. He indicated that he would lay out a plan later this week to safely reopen Texas businesses sometime this week. He added that the process would be a gradual rollout. Patton said that how that plan unfolds is going to be a key into how those businesses bounce back. More importantly, he emphasized the need to listen to medical experts so that this could be done without having to potentially shut down again from a second wave. You don't want to do all that work when you have to turn around and shut things down again, because that would make things worse and do much more harm than what we've seen this time, he said. ECISD at Home starts Monday, by Ruth Campbell. To provide another learning opportunity for students during the COVID-19 pandemic, Ector County ISD is premiering ECISD at Home on the CW and Telemundo networks Monday. Channel 7 called ECISD with the offer of free airtime right after school was closed due to concerns about the disease. Channel 7 has graciously allowed us the airtime on those two networks, and we've gathered a group of our teachers and administrators and central office curriculum folks and our media personnel to put together some programming Monday through Friday, and we'll launch that 1 week from today, Murray said in a telephone interview. The programming will focus on a specific audience daily. Monday's April 20th programming will focus on parents, giving parents some tools to help them navigate this remote learning environment. Tuesday will focus on our pre-K students, Wednesday on elementary, Thursday on middle school, and then Friday will focus on our high school kids, Mary said. The programming has been developed by ECISD teachers, curriculum staff, and others. Murray said they not only developed the programming, but will be starring in them as well. They'll do all the filming, editing, etc., so it's an enormous team effort, and we look forward to launching that for our community, he said. He noted that it's all ECISD people. The networks have given us the airtime, and so we'll have time both on CW and Telemundo, and then we've developed the programming, so it's all us, unlike our situation with the PBS station. On PBS, we use their programming, so programs that the PBS network has developed, and then we wrote curriculum resources on top of that. In this case, we've developed the content for the CW and Telemundo, Murray said. Basin PBS announced in March a new daily lineup of curriculum-based television programs supporting at-home learning for our Permian Basin students. The programming began April 6th and runs from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. to serve pre-kindergarten through 12th grade students. The programs such as Cyber Chase, History Detectives, and American Experience are all aligned with Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills, TECS, standards, a news release said. The CW and Telemundo programming will be ongoing for the rest of the school year. Beyond that, we'll just wait and see. We will be filming and showing this for the rest of the school year with new programming every day, Murray said. He said they have received some guidance from TV personnel, but ECISD has some people on staff who have worked in television and media before. It's an hour of programming. It's a lot of time, energy, and effort to develop that much, and it's something new every day. So new shows, new vignettes, 5 days a week. It's a lot of time and energy. I'm excited to be able to feature our people like this, but the primary reason is not all of our families have wireless internet in their homes, but most of our families, if not all of our families, have access to cable television or access to have antennas, Murray said. If families do have internet access, they can stream these programs even on their phones. We're excited about that for that very reason. We'll be able to reach into our homes much more effectively than we are today, he added. He said the segments have taken quite a bit of time, energy, and effort. Television is not our industry, Murray said. Through this process, we have come to have much respect for the folks in television, just as our parents have gained much respect for the work of our teachers. On a separate item, the district will host a Facebook Live session on the ECISD Facebook page at 7 p.m. Thursday. This week we'll feature two of our counselors, one elementary and one secondary. Our focus will be on helping our families deal with the social and emotional stress and trauma that has been created because of the coronavirus, and also our families just dealing with the stress of the change, Muri said. We'll also talk a little bit about the academic transitions, our seniors as they transition into either college or the military or technical school, and answering questions about that transition. So our counselors will be available that night to respond to either social emotional questions or questions that parents may have regarding the academic side of their children, Muri said. No decision has been made about whether and how to have graduation yet. Muri said he's having a meeting this week with high school administrators to discuss commencement. If we decide not to have traditional ceremony, we want to be able to make sure our parents are clear on the alternatives that we are exploring or the decisions that we make. So another meeting this week, and we'll be rolling out a decision shortly about graduation, Muri said. Obituary for Wednesday, April 15th. Jasmine Jazz Lozano, 17, of Odessa, passed away Friday, April 10th. She was born June 23rd, 2002, in Odessa, to Arturo Jimenez and Felisa Ochoa, and raised by her adopted mother, Bernalda Lozano. Surviving her are her mother, Bernalda Lozano of Odessa, biological father, Arturo Jimenez, biological mother, Felicia Ochoa of Odessa, biological grandmother, Teresa Jimenez of Odessa, brothers, Joshua Lozano, Adrian Lozano, Joe Angel Lozano, and Arthur Lozano, all of Odessa, sister, Alexis Lozano of Odessa, a niece, several uncles and aunts, as well as numerous cousins and friends. Rosary will be held at 7 p.m. Thursday, April 16th at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Graveside services will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, April 17th at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences to the family may be sent online at acreswestfuneral.com. Death notices. Jose Luis Carrillo. Jose Luis Carrillo, 68, of Odessa, died Saturday, April 11th. Mass will be celebrated at 11:30 a.m. Thursday, April 16th at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Jessica Fajardo. Jessica Fajardo, 30, of Odessa, died Sunday, April 12th. A funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m. Thursday, April 16th at Odessa Funeral Home. Funeral services may be viewed through Facebook Live on the Odessa Funeral Home's Facebook page. Thomas Lawrence Hargis, 54, of Midland, died Sunday, April 5th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Francisco Javier Hernandez, 50, of Odessa, died Saturday, April 11th. A graveside service was held April 15th at Rose Hill Garden in the Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by La Paz Parish Funeral Homes of Odessa. Alida Tavares Willard, 66, of Odessa, died Monday, April 13th. A celebration of life is scheduled for 10 a.m. Thursday, April 16th at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery in Odessa 2 section, with Reverend George Brown officiating.
MISD nurses remain in contact with students. From staff reports, Midland ISD buildings are closed through the end of the month because of the coronavirus outbreak, but the district's nurses remain in contact with students, according to the Health Services Director. The nurses, 38 registered nurses and 2 licensed vocational nurses, coordinate care from home via email, telephone, and video conferencing. Emma Jean Douglas said in a press release, "They are calling students to check in, reviewing immunization records, and have worked with parents to schedule medicine and medical device pickups," she said. During the pandemic, the nurses also are helping to distribute personal protective equipment, such as masks, to MISD employees who have to work near others, sewing masks, researching trends, and collecting information for administrators' use as part of their COVID-19 decision-making, according to the release. Douglas, who has been with Midland ISD for 8 years, recently was recognized by the National Association of School Nurses as one of the national winners for the organization's Data for School Nurses Media Contest. She created a by-the-numbers infographic detailing how school nurses impact student success over the course of a year, such as 193,000 nurse visits, 11,000 major medical procedures performed, 94% of students returned to class after seeing a nurse, and 25% of Midland ISD students have major medical needs. Counselors use teletherapy to provide mental health relief. Melanie Sais, Centers. Just 1 month ago, many of us in the Permian Basin were settling into our weekly routine from spring break vacations. The term social distancing was beginning to spread along with the elusive coronavirus pandemic that had caused countries such as Italy to completely shut down borders and businesses. From afar, it looked like an overseas tragedy. What we did not realize was that we were not looking across oceans, but rather into our own future. And here we are today. Centers has been the frontline counseling agency called upon during times of catastrophe for decades, including the tragic shooting that took place in August 2019. Our therapists are experienced in the sphere of crisis management, an important tool in preparing both clients and staff of a nonprofit organization for the need to adapt to changes that fit uncertain times. In early March, our executive director, Christy Edwards, called a planning session with directors to devise a strategy to keep our mission alive during a potential shutdown. Fortunately, Centers had already implemented a HIPAA-compliant teletherapy platform, which would allow us to provide counseling and services by way of internet or telephone. The original plan for the teletherapy platform was to provide outreach to underserved individuals, including elderly and homebound persons, those outside rural communities, and people with unconventional work hours or overbooked schedules. What was once intended as an enhancement to our current services was soon to become the solution to providing mental health relief. Armed with a purpose and a strategy, Centers made the decision to close its doors in order to protect the health and safety of clients and staff alike. Telecommuting and teletherapy was placed into action as we committed to the cause of affordable mental health care for all. Every client at Centers has had the opportunity to continue their therapy with private online or telephonic sessions. 1 month later, the country has settled into a new space of quarantine culture and unprecedented isolation. The nation is facing an economic downfall, rising unemployment, and school closures. Food insecurity is at an all-time high. The Permian Basin has been hit threefold with a pandemic, a plummeting stock market, and a sinking oil industry. Christy Edwards recognized that our home was going to be uniquely affected. It is our mission to help people cope in difficult times, and there is no time like the present to carry out this mission and encourage hope in our community, she told us. 1 month later, West Texas has come together while staying apart. the essential labor force, frontline healthcare workers, families huddled in their homes, elderly and homebound, displaced students, homeless souls. Everyone is feeling the strain of these uncertain times. We West Texans are a people of great resilience. We also have both physical and mental health needs. Our world is facing not-so-normal stresses of life at this time. Centers will continue to work fervently to be a frontline service in our field. Need help? To make an appointment at Centers, call 570-1084.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, April 15, 2020. This article is entitled, "Saudi Oil Floods Market Before Output Pact Begins," by Brian Wingfield and Julian Lee, Bloomberg. Saudi Arabia and other Gulf suppliers may have agreed to cut oil production again starting next month, but by all indications, the taps are still set to remain wide open until then, swelling crude stockpiles for at least a few more weeks. The kingdom's crude exports so far in April stand at 9.3 million barrels a day, according to tanker tracking data compiled by Bloomberg. That compares with 6.8 million barrels a day through the first 2 weeks of March. What's more, there are at least 10 supertankers with the capacity to haul a combined 20 million barrels of oil waiting to load at the Saudi port of Ras Tanura in the coming days. State-owned oil company Saudi Aramco pledged to boost output to 12.3 barrels per day in April as it slashed prices in a battle for market share following the collapse of the three-year-old OPEC Plus pact in March. As the coronavirus spread across the globe, governments imposed restrictions on movement and demand collapsed further, as did prices. Following marathon international talks this past weekend, there's now a new global deal to limit output, with Saudi Arabia agreeing to trim production to 8.5 million barrels a day in May and June. There's been no indication that any producer will close the taps before May, meaning millions of barrels a day of crude entering the market that aren't needed. The arrangement is from May, Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman, the Saudi oil minister, told reporters on a conference call on Monday in reference to the OPEC Plus agreement. All of April was sold. In other words, the price war is still on for now. So far, the market hasn't been impressed. Another measure, the official selling prices that traders pay for actual barrels of crude in the physical market, indicates that Saudi Arabia is still looking to gain market share. The so-called OSPs for April were already at their lowest in at least three decades. The kingdom released May's prices yesterday, deepening the discounts to most markets, especially Asia, where the cut was greater than expected. Traders are awaiting similar figures from other Gulf producers like the United Arab Emirates and Kuwait, which generally follow the Saudi lead on pricing and production. They also have little incentive to cut output sooner than required. UAE Energy Minister Suhail Al-Mazrouri said on his Twitter account after the meeting that the country is committing to reducing production from its current production level of 4.1 million barrels a day. That's at least 1 million barrels a day higher than it pumped in March, according to Bloomberg. All of that oil has to go somewhere, and with demand decimated, there's only one obvious destination: storage. With cargo nominations already set for this month, Saudi Arabia isn't likely to reduce shipments to its customers, but it could trim volumes it's sending to storage tanks in Egypt, Rotterdam, and Japan. Without any reduction in those flows, though, stockpiles will continue to build through the remainder of April. This article is entitled, "Oil Declines as Concern of Steep Recession Counters Cut," by Alex Longley and Robert Tuttle, Bloomberg. Oil declined as projections for the steepest recession in almost a century outweighed planned output cuts from the world's biggest producers. Futures in New York fell as much as 5.7% amid persistent concerns of a massive supply glut. The International Monetary Fund estimated on Tuesday that global gross domestic product will shrink 3% this year, signaling that energy demand will plunge and could be worse than anticipated if the coronavirus lingers or returns. At the same time, a key time spread on the American benchmark, a gauge of the health of the market, is at its weakest level in more than a decade, as speculation grows that the main U.S. storage hub will fill to capacity. This week's OPEC Plus deal to slash production by 9.7 million barrels a day amounts to the largest coordinated cut in history. But the decision doesn't go into effect until May, and is still dwarfed by the decline in oil consumption as the coronavirus pandemic keeps multiple countries in lockdown. There is some general concern about oversupply, and maybe the cut isn't going to be big enough, Phil Flynn, senior market analyst at Price Futures Group, Inc., said. The cut doesn't do you a lot of good until the end of the month. The curbs will start removing almost a tenth of global output. Saudi energy prince Abdulaziz bin Salman said Monday that the kingdom is ready to trim production even further if needed, but will only cut if others in the alliance reduce their supply accordingly. He also said the more bearish demand forecasts may be too pessimistic, so the alliance may not need to make deeper cuts. This article is entitled "Trump Negotiating to Lease Oil Storage Space to 9 Firms" by Sheila Taubin and Jennifer A. DeLowey, Bloomberg. The U.S. Energy Department is negotiating with 9 companies to rent about 23 million barrels of oil storage capacity in its Strategic Petroleum Reserve as part of a Trump administration bid to help drain the country's growing glut of crude. The Energy Department said most of the oil would be delivered in May and June, with the crude distributed into all 4 of the reserve storage sites in Texas and Louisiana. The agency did not say what companies were involved in the deals or detail the terms of their contracts. When producing oil, you have 2 options. You either use it or you store it, Energy Secretary Dan Brouillette said in a news release. Providing our storage for these U.S. companies will help alleviate some of the stress on the American energy industry and its incredible workforce. The Energy Department earlier this month offered to lease as much as 30 million barrels of storage to domestic producers that are struggling to find places to keep excess oil amid an unprecedented collapse in demand caused by the COVID-19 outbreak. Of the original total, 22.8 million barrels were marked for low-sulfur crude and the rest for high-sulfur oil. The tender offering the storage closed April 9th. The final mix and grade of crudes that would be stored under the leasing initiative were not immediately available. The oil earmarked for storage under the program will be aggregated from small, medium, and large producers, the Energy Department said. Companies can schedule return of their crude through March 2021, subtracting what the agency said would be a small amount of oil to cover the SPR's cost of storage. President Donald Trump has sought to help America's shale industry after large swaths of the world shut down to stem the spread of coronavirus, causing demand to crumble. Trump helped broker a deal among the world's largest producers to cut crude supplies by 9.7 million barrels a day from May, ending a price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia. The planned oil leasing will consume roughly a third of spare capacity in the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which was established after the Arab oil embargo in the 1970s to help the U.S. weather supply shocks. The Trump administration is still seeking to fill up the rest of the reserve, including by buying domestic crude for the stockpile. An initial proposal to purchase as much as 77 million barrels of crude for the reserve was blocked by Democrats in Congress, though another purchase plan may be revived as part of the next stimulus package.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading a locally written column from the opinion section of the Odessa American, Wednesday, April 15th. Guest View: Food Banking During the Madness of March, by Libby Campbell, Executive Director, West Texas Food Bank. There is a specific comfort in the consistency at the West Texas Food Bank's warehouse. When I wander through the racks of food and processing rooms in the cavernous warehouse, there is a constant buzz. Most times, it's the staff fulfilling orders and processing donations. And others, it's just the hum of the HVAC system maintaining a constant temperature for the food we keep on hand. Consistency and constant are two words I hold in high esteem. The West Texas Food Bank, WTFB, must provide a consistent and constant service for those West Texans who need us the most. March proved to be a stress on that constant like I've never seen in the 10 years I've been the executive director of the food bank. March came in like a lamb. Families were preparing to relax over the upcoming spring break, and we at the food bank were busy preparing for our annual gala event, the Forever Full Margarita Fiesta. Things were certainly different in 2020. The price of oil was down, and there was an increased awareness that a virus from a distant land was making big waves throughout the world, and Texas was more than likely in its path. And then the lion came roaring in at spring break, and businesses began taking precautions. At the food bank, I consulted with my board of directors and brought together our senior leadership team to implement our disaster plan. The decisions we made were some of the most heartbreaking decisions I have had to make in my food banking career. CDC guidelines rapidly changed, and for the health and the wellness of the FWTFB staff, we made the decision to stop all volunteer activities. Events and classes were canceled, including our large annual gala, and we closed the signature feature of both WTFB facilities, our client choice pantries. The number one concern was to keep the team safe, and I knew we had to take drastic measures. Essentially, WTFB was closed to the public. What you might not realize is just how much these tough decisions changed the way we do business practically overnight. With no volunteers, the warehouse staff had to step up to build our new pantry boxes, and with no client choice pantry, our distribution model had to change to a drive-through so we could safely serve those in need. According to a Feeding America release, the COVID-19 pandemic has created unprecedented demand for food across the country, including demand in the charitable food distribution system. Year-over-year sales at U.S. grocery retailers is up between 80 to 200% from late February to early March due to the surge in consumer demand. This consumer demand for food has limited the Feeding America Network's access to donated food, particularly shelf-stable food, which is a critical need for food banks as they prepare to ramp up low and no-contact distributions. The result of this surge is that donations of food from retail and manufacturers to food banks have declined 40 to 60% in recent weeks, and what we are seeing at WTFB is no different. In a typical month, our drivers bring in over 100,000 pounds of food from local grocery stores, but now the shelves are bare, and departments are closed as staff from services like the bakery have been reassigned to help run checkout stands, disinfect the store, and stock shelves. Customers are purchasing the bakery, deli, and dairy items which would normally be donated, and this leaves us short. We have had to strike a delicate balance between the dwindling number of pounds coming in and the increasing number of pounds going out. One way we continue to meet the demand is through our purchased food program, which allows WTFB to buy shelf-stable food directly from manufacturers, often at or below cost. The availability and access to these lifelines during our regular operations is crucial, but with the increased demand seen by the retail outlets, this food is proving to be difficult to acquire in a timely manner. We are using the unemployment numbers as a barometer to gauge what is in store for us. As more and more West Texans find themselves not returning to work because of the health crisis, and as more and more oil field jobs are lost, our lines will continue to get longer. we are hearing stories of workers being unable to access unemployment benefits. This is evolving into a dilemma which is leaving everyone nervous, anxious, and scared. Looking forward, I don't know what tomorrow will look like, but I do know we will continue to serve the people who need it the most, many of whom have never experienced hunger before. We have received support, both big and small, from our amazingly generous community, and for that I am grateful. West Texans always amaze me with their grace and grit, and we know this too shall pass. When this is over, you will shower the West Texas Food Bank with food drives, and you will show up to volunteer, just like you have time and time again. But for now, I ask that you stay home, stay safe, and please stay healthy. Very fondly, yours in service, Libby Campbell.
To Your Good Health, by Dr. Keith Roach. How dangerous is secondhand vape smoke? Dear Dr. Roach, I am a non-smoking woman living with a smoker. He smoked outside. Now he is vaping, but inside. How dangerous is secondhand vape smoke? I'm having a problem finding any information on the subject. Could you please inform me? HD. Answer. You can't find much because there is little known. It is known that vape smoke contains nicotine, and evidence for nicotine exposure can be found in the blood of people who are around those who vape. Other compounds that are released from vaping and can be found in the air include small aerosol particles and volatile organic compounds, though at a lower level than in cigarette smokers. Until better information is available, I would say that secondhand vape exposure has health concerns, and although they are likely not as bad as secondhand tobacco smoke, the magnitude of the harms are not well known.
Dear Abby, woman with new boyfriend keeps neighbor up at night. Dear Abby, I live in a densely populated luxury high-rise apartment building in a busy downtown neighborhood that has a diverse mix of residents. I have lived here for 4 years, and I've never really had many issues, until recently. My next-door neighbor works in the medical field that at times has very late or early hours associated with it. I also work in a field that has odd hours, so I am empathetic. My issue is, she has a new boyfriend she is intimate with anywhere between 2 and 4 a.m., I am a light sleeper and get awakened by their sessions together. I can hear her voice and, at times, jostling of furniture. I have thought about telling the building management, but it would be obvious that the complaint would have to come from me, and I don't want that. I also don't want to cause embarrassment to either of us. How can I address this delicately, without causing embarrassment, or must I suck it up and suffer? Sleepless in Chicago. Dear Sleepless, write your neighbor a sweet note explaining the problem and ask if there is anything she can do to muffle the sounds you are hearing. It might be something as simple as moving her bed away from the wall or placing it against a different one. However, if she's uncooperative, as a last resort, do discuss your problem with the building manager. I assure you, it won't be the first time he or she has heard something like this, or the last. Dear Abby, I suffer from a moderate to severe case of social anxiety. I'm now in my first relationship with a partner who tends to move fast and whose parents have recently been asking to meet me. This has caused tension in our relationship, as well as in his relationship with his parents. Because of some past experiences with previous partners, his parents have preconceived notions about me, which makes me feel all the more reluctant to meet them. I don't like feeling vulnerable, especially with people who don't know me. One counseling session with a boss, a professor, someone in authority, etc., and I'm on the verge of tears or already crying. I know I'll have to meet his parents someday, but I don't know how to approach it. I feel overwhelmed just thinking about it. Please help. Socially Anxious. Dear Socially Anxious, I hope you are receiving professional help for your social anxiety. you should not approach meeting your partner's parents with a negative attitude. Smile, put your best foot forward, and try to make a good impression. Keep in mind that this is not a performance review. A professor you need to give you a good grade or anyone in authority. They are parents of a son whose past judgment about partners may have been less than stellar, and of course they have concerns. It would be nice if they thought the moon rose and set on you, but if they don't, will it affect your relationship with your partner? If the answer is yes, then he may not be mature and independent enough to be having a romance with anyone. Hold a good thought and stop hiding out. Jacqueline Bigger's Stars. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Aries and a moon in Capricorn until 3:37 a.m., when the moon enters Aquarius. Happy birthday for Wednesday, April 15, 2020. Realistic to the extreme, you are dominant and organized. Patience is a virtue when planning finances this year. There will be changes in the source of your income or saleable job skills. Be receptive to growth and all will be well. If single, working on worthwhile projects together facilitates true and lasting love. If attached, unconditional love and psychological support eases stress, and the two of you provide plenty of that. Aries loves like there's no tomorrow. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 4 stars. Today heralds what you welcome most of all, an opportunity for growth and change. You reach an explosive acceptance of what is going on after a long period of stalemate. Prepare for an exciting day. Avoid those who indulge in negative thinking. Tonight, pamper yourself. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 5 stars. Today, you are an example to others. Your writing and speaking abilities will be in top form. This marks a cycle of renewed energy. Your professional aspirations will bring a special sense of fulfillment by the end of today. Bravo! Tonight, call an elderly relative. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. A new hobby or form of creative expression becomes very important to you today. Romantic interludes are a source of genuine delight. You feel social and extroverted again. Many friends respond to you reaching out. Tonight, watch a movie about outer space travel. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 3 stars. Oppositions might make it important to attend to a legal matter. Allow a companion to make suggestions and lead the way. Read between the lines and do some research. All the mysteries can be solved. Tonight, take the night off. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 3 stars. A sense of humor and the art of pleasant conversation will be the keys to entering a new social circle today. Warm feelings are shared with a special someone, and love becomes more stable. Gently but resolutely release any addictive loves. Tonight, date night. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 4 stars. Today brings you into contact with the right people and circumstances to facilitate wellness. You experiment with alternative health techniques such as yoga and affirmations. You take reasonable care around those who are ill. Tonight, a psychic vampire must be avoided. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 4 stars. There will be an ease regarding love today. Friendships and more serious relationships touch other areas of your life. Do not make a commitment on this day, however. You might change your mind. Tonight, do something adventurous, even if it is a virtual experience. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 4 stars. Today promotes love and relaxation. A new appreciation of the peace and freedom of solitude develop. It is not as limiting or as frustrating as it has been in the past. Answers and inspiration come from within now. Tonight, an early night's sleep. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 3 stars. Promote your image and display your talents today. There might be sudden meetings and partings. An electric quality pervades your professional sphere. It is quite the hectic day, but you handle it like a pro. Tonight, catch up with siblings and children. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 3 stars. Today is all about interaction with others. Remember the value of networking and improving your people skills. Maintain a balance between your personal and professional life. Being well-rounded will help you reach your goals. Tonight, reach out to an elderly relative. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 4 stars. This is your day. True happiness in a really good relationship can be attained. Be especially patient and very sincere. There can be an old hurdle to surmount before love is free to grow. Have faith that it will. Tonight, celebrate your accomplishments. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 4 stars. More questions of sincerity arise today. It's a wonderful time for learning and problem-solving, as intellectual capacity is in top form. Take note of ideas that occur now as they prove very useful later. Tonight, take time out for meditation and deep breathing. Born today, artist Leonardo da Vinci, 1452, singer Bessie Smith, 1894, actress Emma Thompson, 1959.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or your favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.